still raining, and it's still 48 degrees. We knew that it was going to be cold at this time. Heck, we've known that for 2 weeks. But record low high temperatures are a bit surprising. How much damage has been done in the freeze zone? We'll find out how the end of the growing season is going from Iowa to Idaho.
Live from a hazy shade of non-calendar autumn via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with Senator Charles Grassley. Then it's our Farmer Forum with panelists Tim Barak and Bill Flory. And right after the news, Margie Eckelkamp from The Scoop. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. And now, the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory!
Hey, Davis, good morning. We've got a lot of big news to cover with Senator Grassley this morning, don't we?
Yes, we do. I'm going to touch on, well, I guess I'm not sure exactly what you're referring to. There's a bevy of big news coming out.
Right.
I'm going to touch on some of the some things before we get to that conversation.
I would guess that those gap year waivers are going to make the news. I would guess that some COVID relief is going to make the news.
Well, yeah, that's in there. Okay, yeah. No, well, I don't know if you can call it relief yet. I don't know if you can call it relief yet, which is why I had to buzz you on that one.
I got you. Very good. And of course, we'll talk with Tim from Iowa, Bill from Idaho, about the growing season. I'm sure that Bill has seen some of those cold, some of those really cold temperatures up there. We'll see just how much, what the development of his crops were when these cold temperatures moved in. So,
and I noticed you didn't say Uncle Bill. This is a whole different Flory branch of the tree, right? Not even on the same tree.
That's what we both believe. Okay.
And that may be
because that's what we both want to believe. I'm not sure.
Games we play within our own minds, right?
but as far as we know, no, there is no relation between Bill and myself.
Sure. Very good.
Okay,
I felt
man,
like we needed
get
to get that
it.
Out of the way. Well, yeah, I want to start with highlights from USDA's crop condition update. That's for the week ending September 6th. Corn is 97% in dough, 79% dented, 25% mature, 61% good to excellent. Soybeans, 20% dropping leaves, 65% good to excellent. Spring wheat, 82% harvested. Cotton is 96% setting bolls, 37% opening bolls, 45% good to excellent, and winter wheat is 5% planted. Your thoughts?
Interesting. Everything is ahead of schedule on the corn crop. The soybean crop is basically on schedule. So is spring wheat, cotton. Winter wheat seedings, maybe just a touch slow. You know what? I didn't even really look at the crop progress on the winter wheat seedings, but it seems like everything is off to a good start for the winter wheat crop.
Well, President Donald Trump has ordered the Environmental Protection Agency to deny gap year renewable fuel standard waivers. The move is believed to be aimed at bolstering farm state support for his campaign. The January 10th Circuit Court ruling that allowed three small refinery waivers for the 2016 compliance year opened the floodgates to a bevy of retroactive small refinery waivers reaching all the way back to the 2011 compliance year. This as Politico reports recently that the Department of Justice has decided not to appeal that decision, which is viewed as another sign the Trump administration is opting to side with biofuel backers. Looky there.
Yeah, but Big Oil is petitioning the Supreme Court on this.
Okay.
So EPA, like you said, has indicated that they're not going to go along with an appeal of the 10th District Court's or 10th Circuit Court's decision, but I don't know where things are going to land on the petition for the Supreme Court. It leaves some uncertainty still, but boy, I tell you what, it's good news. And the RIN market is definitely indicating that the early word that President Trump has ordered the EPA to throw out those gap year waivers is accurate. So some good news, but yet some cautionary tone in the news that's out for the RFS.
Well, the Senate says it will forward a trimmed version of its coronavirus aid package, anticipating a vote on Thursday. That's tomorrow. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said, quote, senators will not be voting on whether this targeted package satisfies every one of their legislative hopes and dreams in floor remarks yesterday. House Democrats continue to insist on a $2.2 trillion package. Should the measure reach the House floor, it is expected to be dead on arrival. And there is even talk the bill does not have the support among Senate Republicans to move forward. Yeah. Chip, we'll get more from
Senator Grassley's take on this.
The National Federation of Independent Businesses reports small business optimism rose during August. While still below pre-pandemic levels, the measure remains above its historical 46-year average. The survey's uncertainty index, however, posted its second highest reading since 2017. Chief Economist Bill Dunkelberg said, quote, we are seeing areas of improvement in the small business economy as job openings and plans to hire are increasing, but many small businesses are still struggling and are uncertain about what the future will hold, Chip.
Yeah, that's why some of them are looking for the Paycheck Protection Program to be included in the next round of COVID aid. And if it is, hopefully the timing of it will be better than the initial offering.
And finally here, trials of a COVID-19 vaccine developed by Oxford University and AstraZeneca were put on hold for a second time after a participant contracted an unexplained illness. Much hope has been pinned on the vaccine, which is being tested on tens of thousands of people in phase 3 trials. A spokesperson said such pauses were normal and illnesses often happen by chance. Chip.
Yep, absolutely. Things happen when you're in the trials, no doubt. Okay, let's get to Margie Eckelkamp, the editor of The Scoop. How you doing, Margie?
Hey, Chip, doing well this morning.
Good, good, good. So, what does $1 billion get you in the southern ag market?
There's a big merger that has a wide swath across the southeast, and that's between the Tennessee Farmers Cooperative, Agra AFC, which is based in Alabama, and Greenpoint Ag, based in Memphis. And this new merger will also have ownership stake from Winfield United. So we are following a co-op model, but really focusing on the agronomy business. In all, total sales for a year will total $1 billion for this newly formed company, which will carry forward the Greenpoint Ag name. And I was able to talk to its newly named CEO, Jeff Blair, who comes from the Andersons. And Jeff says this is really just a continuing trend in the industry with consolidation, and that goes everywhere from farmers to suppliers to retailers. He also shares that there are two important things carrying forward, and that would be the importance of scale in the ag retail business, both for buying power as well as logistics. And then the other consideration would be technology and pulling technology all the way through their business down to their growers and maximizing the opportunities there.
Wow. Okay. So from a customer standpoint, Margie, increased efficiency, is that what the goal is?
Yeah, I think the goal is to double down in the way that they're serving farmers, specifically focused on agronomy. So dividing out any focus or intentions from the grain business, for example, from those other businesses, and really focusing on those agronomy products and services.
Gotcha. All right, Margie, good stuff. Thanks.
Thank you, Chip. Full interviews available online.
Excellent. All right, very good. Margie is the editor of The Scoop at Farmers Advisor on Twitter. Thank you so much, Margie. Okay, we're going to get to the bottom line of several issues, the RFS and the SRE gap year waivers, COVID relief. What's the status of the transparency bill for the cattle? We've got Senator Grassley up next.
Your next piece of equipment is on MachineryPete.com. Search equipment from dealerships across the country to find what you're looking for. Only on MachineryPete.com.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. Glad that you could join us this morning. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with us. And it's time for another conversation with Senator Chuck Grassley from Iowa. Senator Grassley, thank you so much for making time this morning.
Always glad to be with you, Chip.
You bet. How's the crops doing into the end of the season?
Really hurt by the lack of rain. After we got pretty good rain till July the 18th, and then very little rain until this week. maybe 1 inch through the rest of July and into August. I was in Western Iowa on my 99-county tour, and my Q&A with my constituents, and I observed a really worse drought in Western Iowa than I did in North Central Iowa, where I live, close to Cedar Falls, a little town of New Hartford. But our crops are going to come in short this year, but not as bad as in Western Iowa, I guess.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Yeah, that's kind of what we saw on crop tour this year, Senator. So that's and right now we're still getting plenty of rain. So I don't know what that's going to do to the start of the harvest, but it might push things back just a little bit for us. And before we get to your 99 county meetings, which is a remarkable feat, if you ask me, a couple of issues that I want to get to here first. What's the latest that you're hearing on the gap year SREs? The word that we've got is that President Trump has told EPA's Wheeler to throw them out.
Well, I hope that's right. And if that would, if that fits in with we didn't really get a definitive answer from Trump when he was in Cedar Rapids for the big windstorm damage. But I did hear Senator Ernst say that they ought to be thrown out. And he said he was going to take a good look at it. I don't know the extent he has, but it would be very good news if he did it. It would fit in with what I heard from Wheeler when Ernst said, how come you're even taking these gap waivers? Then he said, of course, the law requires us to do that. And I don't know if that's the correct interpretation of law, but that's what he's doing. And she said, you ought to just throw them out because they don't make sense getting after waivers in 2020 for years back in 2011 to 2015. But they considered them. So we heard Weaver say, I don't know what I can do to help them, even if they were entitled to them, because there's no RINs certificates to give waivers on.
Right.
So that's not a definitive answer on his part, but it seems to me, as he was initially thinking about it, that that in fact the extent to which he was thinking about it, that he didn't really know how he could help them. And then I think we had some discussion of the Tenth Circuit Court of Appeals opinion that was issued 6 months ago that seemed to imply that what it simply said is they had already given some waivers that weren't warranted. So I don't know. That seems to me going to curb what EPA can do to some extent.
Right. Yes. Yeah. It seems like it is very good news for the SRE. It sounds like Big Oil is going to continue to push this issue and may try to take it to the Supreme Court, but without any help from EPA, Senator, because EPA has said that they don't want to tag in on any appeals to the Tenth Circuit. If they would change gears now and join in on an appeal or to the Supreme Court, I think that would be surprising to me.
I don't have any reason to believe that they would. They ain't going to join. They're going to have to defend the government's position, which seems to me they'd have to go along with the Tenth Circuit. If the Tenth Circuit said they illegally issued some waivers, they'd have to stick with that position.
Yeah. I'm with you on that. Okay. On the COVID relief package, Leader McConnell is pushing for it's a skinny COVID package, I guess, about $500 billion. Are you on board with that plan, Senator?
Yes, but I wouldn't call it skinny when you're spending half a trillion dollars. I'd like to use the words targeted help for people hurt by the virus, and I think that would be better, because spending a half a trillion dollars is a big decision here in Washington. At least it ought to be a big decision.
That's right. I agree. And thank you for that reminder. I appreciate that. The House says it's dead on arrival, won't negotiate if that's a starting point. Is there much hope that McConnell will be able to change Speaker Pelosi's mind on this?
Well, we won't know until we get a bill passed, but that gives him an opportunity. But it's going to show one of two things. We know that there are still people hurting from the government shutting down the economy, and they deserve some help. Let's just look at K-12 education. There's money in there for that. And they have increased expenses because they got to do so many things to protect the kids from the virus. Just one example. But there's people hurting, and if the Democrats don't want to help people that are hurting, they're going to have to explain that to the voters. We aren't going to have to explain it.
Right. Gotcha. Why is there so much negotiation between Speaker Pelosi and Treasury Secretary Mnuchin on this? Why can't we see more conversation between McConnell and Pelosi?
Well, I think I would explain that for the senators this way, that we have been meeting regularly with Mnuchin and having telephone conversations while we weren't in session during the two conventions. And we feel that Mnuchin knows where Senate Republicans stand, and it's probably a little easier for two people to negotiate than it would be getting several senators along with the White House sitting down with Pelosi.
Gotcha. Okay. Okay. It's time to get to this because I find this remarkable. You just finished your 40th annual 99 county meeting, Senator. Congratulations on that.
Yeah. And do you know that there's some people, I started this before some of these people that are complaining about it were born. January of 1981. And now they're saying, well, I'm not holding them right because I'm not having every one of the 99 county meetings be an open meeting. Well, they never have been. I've tried to have several open meetings where anybody can come, and more of those than other type of meetings. But there's a lot of people can't come to my town meetings. Like I go to a few hospitals. They can't come to a town meeting. I go to factories if they'll shut down the assembly line and let people ask me questions. I go there. I go to where small business people go, like Rotary Clubs or something like that. They can't shut down their business to come to a town meeting. And then I go to high schools because you never get anybody under 18 years of age coming to an open town meeting. So I need the opinion of young people. And yet there's right. a lot of these progressive groups that I don't know where they're coming from, but they're obviously very young and don't know how I handled it. They're actually complaining in the press because I don't have 99 county open meetings. And then they complain I don't maybe go to Polk County to have an open meeting. That's where Des Moines is. Well, it's a big county, and I spend a lot of time there. One year I kept track. I had 30 different meetings in Polk County where people could set the agenda and ask me questions. So it's a little irritating to get that complaint because most everybody in Iowa is following the Grassley example and going to every county every year, and I started, and yet I'm getting complaints from some liberal Democrats that I'm not doing it right.
Yeah. Well, you know, I understand exactly where you're coming from, Senator, because when you do things that are in an effort to bring information out there, somebody's always going to tell you how you're doing it wrong, Senator. Somebody will always tell you how you're doing it wrong. So I just want to say congratulations on it. So you're on Fox News tonight. Don't hold anything back. What are you going to tell them that you haven't told us?
Well, of course, just like you've asked me a question. You set the agenda. They're going to have to set the agenda, and I don't know what they're going to ask me, but I'll answer their questions just like I'm answering your questions.
Very good. Very good. Senator, it is always a treat to talk with you. Thank you so much for what you've done. Thank you so much for holding these county meetings. The 40th, you've completed 40 of the 99 county meetings. Pretty remarkable stuff. Thank you so much, Senator.
Lord willing, I'll be back at it starting over again in January of 2021.
Good deal. Hey, last word. Should we play football this fall?
Well, I just did an interview on that, and I said, yes, we should. But I'm concerned about the virus, but we got fans
sure.
that are responsible and can handle the virus.
Got to go, Senator. Thank you.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And joining us now is Pro Farmer Senior Market Analyst Jeff Wilson. How are you doing this morning, Jeff?
Good morning, Chip. I'm doing pretty well.
Good, good, good. Hey, if you guys missed the conversation that I had with Jeff yesterday afternoon on AgriTalk, go back and listen to it again. I thought it was fantastic. I thought Jeff just did a really, really good job in getting people ready for Friday's USDA Crop Production Supply and Demand Report. What's going on today? Got a little pressure on corn.
That's all we're doing today is getting ready for the report on Friday.
Yeah.
No one wants to take on any new positions. We've had a lot of fun buying over the course of the last 4 weeks, both corn and beans. The corn market closed out at its highest price, closing price, since March 27th yesterday. They closed above the 200-day moving average, and it just doesn't have enough strength now to continue higher until we get the USDA numbers on Friday. The beans also had a high close, highest close since January 10th yesterday. It actually pushed to a new swing high this morning and just kind of ran out of steam, even though we had some more sales announcements to China
yeah.
this morning, following sales announcements yesterday.
Gotcha. Okay. Big move to the upside yesterday in live cattle, reversing that today.
Consolidating its gains. I think there's a lot of uncertainty about how quickly we're going to come back from the pandemic. Restaurant reopenings are slow, but we've proven over the course of summer that beef demand at home has been much stronger than expected, and now we just need to see if we can get the cash cattle market to start firming this week.
Gotcha. All right. Thank you, Jeff. That real quick, just what's going on in the hog market. Looks like we've got a little bit of mixed trade going on there. Thank you, Jeff. That is Pro Farmer Senior Market Analyst Jeff Wilson.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
America's Conservation Ag Movement would like to recognize American Farmland Trust for its efforts in contributing to healthier, more resilient production agriculture systems. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk. Remember that you can still get access to all of the great content from Farm Journal Field Days 24/7 at agweb.com/fielddaysondemand. To give you a taste, here's Machinery Pete talking about his predictions for the future of ag.
We don't like to change. I don't like to change. But I tell you, in these difficult times, change is what we have to be willing to do. And if you get right down to it, at least to my thinking, change is in our American DNA. It's what we do. Has it ever been easy? No. But think of our forefathers and the changes they've gone through on the farm to survive and make your operations better through the years. Now, the other word that I think of for the future of the farming industry, well, that's opportunity. Now, opportunity is sort of like the wind. You can't get your hands around it. You just have to be willing to keep your eyes open. It'll show up at different times and situations, like COVID-19. And look what's happened in the auction industry. It was very scary. Gosh, we're going to have all these cancellations, postponements. What are we going to do? Well, what happened? If you've been following my reporting, you know what happened. The industry as a whole turned on a dime and leaned into the change in the opportunity of online auctions. It's been an amazing success story.
Best of Farm Journal Field Days is brought to you by DeKalb Asgrow and the new Growing Ahead, that's hashtag Growing Ahead initiative, sponsored by Bayer. Follow DeKalb/Asgrow on Twitter. That's @Asgrow_DeKalb. Instagram, DeKalb Asgrow, and Facebook, DeKalb Asgrow Seed, to see how your local teams have gone virtual to keep delivering you solid agronomic advice you expect. All right.
And you
Let's
can still access all of that for free. I feel like that wasn't mentioned, but it bears repeating. It's free.
Yes.
You just go there. You just go
yes,
there.
Yes, absolutely.
And see.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Agweb.com/fielddaysondemand. Tim Burrock is Farmer Northeast Iowa. He's part of our Farmer Forum. We're still efforting getting Bill on the line with us here this morning, but we've got Tim. That'll give us a great start. How you doing there, Tim?
I'm doing well. Getting some rain, actually more yep. than I want now.
Well, yeah, that's the thing about this year. I mean, we always talk about how farmers will complain that it's either too dry and then once it starts to rain and complain that it's too wet. But there's no doubt. I mean, we're pushing 3 inches of rain, 3.5 inches of rain in Northeast Iowa over the Labor Day weekend. It's getting to be a bit much, isn't it?
Or more. And the reason, you know, it's like the old adage, farmers complain about everything, but seed corn harvest in our world has just begun. And it's amazing how it can be. It can't rain until the pickers start. And as soon as the pickers have started, the rain begins. And they're pulling the trucks out, you know, they got to pull them out on the roads. And it's just so ironic. It just fits the year.
Yeah. Yeah, it certainly does. So how do you feel like your corn and soybean crops handled that dry second half of July and into August?
Well, I actually have one soybean yield report from a neighbor. So we can start with that, and then I'll talk about seed corn. So it's a 1-0 soybean maturity. It was planted April 16th, and they started combining last Friday and Saturday, and they've done 80 acres. And they said on the light ground, it yielded 30, and on the heavy ground, which would retain the moisture, it was 50 to 70. So the average on the first 80 acres is 43 bushel an acre. And they said we've got better land to go, so we think it'll push close to 50. But compared to where we would normally be, that's probably a good 10 or more under what it would have been in a normal year.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt about it.
Seed corn. Now, seed corn.
Yeah.
Seed corn, there's 800 acres harvested in this area. And the guys running it say, once again, the pattern is the same. There's no surprise here. The lighter dirt, due to both germination and, you know, lack of moisture, is down. The heavier dirt is actually quite good. So they say, overall, we think it's an average seed corn crop. So maybe in the end, if that's a reflection, and it usually is, that our corn crop will be average. Now, August 1st, I would have said, could be record. Right. But that changed because I went 7 weeks without any real rain.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, there is no doubt that 7 weeks without rain on this corn crop that we had, because we had a busker coming out the gate, Tim. This corn crop felt really good. It feels pretty average. We've got Bill Flory on the line with us from Idaho. Bill, it's good to talk with you again. How you doing, man?
Good morning, Chip from the Fourth I State. How are you?
I am doing just dandy, just dandy. What's the weather like up your way?
Beautiful. We've had, starting with an early spring and warm weather, we've had nearly a perfect year in the Northwest. The fall wheat crop, spring wheat crop, both reflect that in not only quantity, but also in quality. We're seeing test weights in the 64 pounds per bushel.
Wow.
It's been nearly perfect. Winter wheat harvest is over, spring wheat, and some of the alternative crops are still going, but the weather's been nearly perfect. Intermittent rain all season. It's been a great year, and the quality of this crop for our domestic and international customers, Chip, is beyond comparison.
Right, especially for those Asian customers, right, Bill? What I'm hearing is that some of the noodle wheat has tested off the charts.
Absolutely. The industry does a crop quality survey, and we're, I think, in the sixth week, Wheat Marketing Center in Portland, and I get the reports weekly, and it is just excellent. I mean, our customers domestically and internationally have an exceptional quality and stable, very stable quantity to work with this year. So
good. Good, good, good. I want to talk politics with you two guys here before we get done with it, but I want to stay on the production side of things for a bit. Tim, you're a hog producer. I know that this has been the most difficult year in your career of raising hogs. What's the status?
Well, you know, the cash market is gradually coming up. And the last load of hogs I sold brought $110 a head, which is much better than in early July when they were bringing 70 to 80. So, you know, it's come up. The problem is that when you've got 140 to 150 in them, it's still, you know, a losing proposition. But the backlog is gone. You know, the weights have come down. And so we're out of the backlog struggle, and now it's just a marketing the pork issue and how much can we export and how much will the consumer buy. But the packers have made sure they've made themselves whole first.
Yeah. So what's it like being in the hog business right now? I mean, can you stay in the business, Tim?
I'm not.
Okay.
But, you know, I think you can't be in the hog business. You've got to be in the meat business, and you've got to control both ends. And I didn't have that ability.
Yeah. That's crazy stuff, man. So the losses continue to mount. One of the things that we continue to do is try to get current on these hog marketings. What's the latest you've heard as far as the backup goes?
Backup, I think the backup's gone. We're not
really
having any trouble getting loads in, and the weights are down, and so I think that's over.
Oh, good. Good, good, good. Didn't get a chance to ask Senator Grassley about additional relief or compensation for the value of those market-ready hogs that were euthanized, but, boy, that would sure bring some relief to hog country, wouldn't it?
Well, the folks that had to euthanize, yeah, they sure need help. But the people that didn't have to euthanize need it just as bad, because the economic drain has just been incredible when you've been in the business. So, you know, if they have some aid, I hope it gets spread out to more than euthanization. Livestock guys taking it in the pretty hard here.
Yeah, I know what you're going to say, and you're right. Bill, what about up your way as far as the COVID relief? What's been the reaction, the response?
Well, it's a mixed response in the rural Northwest. There's certainly a difference between states and how they're approaching it. Idaho is a lot like South Dakota, very very considerate of people's health and is allowing people some great latitude. Businesses are open. Stark contrast to Washington and Oregon. Universities in Oregon and Washington are really struggling, charging a lot of money for remote classes. So it's it's all over the board, but I know four people who had coronavirus, and they all live in Seattle.
Gotcha.
And they all survived.
Yep, gotcha. Okay, when we come back, we're going to talk some of this presidential election. What are the guys doing right? What are they doing wrong?
AgriTalk is brought to you by America's Conservation Ag Movement, a national partnership to help farmers scale conservation for their businesses, the environment, and their communities. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
Welcome back to the Farmer Forum on AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me.
Yes, sir.
And we've got Bill Flory from Idaho and Tim Brock from Northeast Iowa. Bill, we were talking about the quality of the crop and how it's attractive. Have you seen any results any increase in business for product out of the PNW into Asia because of the quality of the crop?
Our customers know and understand and monitor very closely our crop quality, not only through the crop quality survey at the Wheat Marketing Center by the industry, but also from their own resources. So we have seen an upsurge in wheat bookings in new crop and corn and beans out of the Northwest. A lot of those, part of those are going into China, thanks to Navarro and Lighthizer and Dowd, and driven by the president.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, that's excellent. Hey, you know what? I need to mention that the Farmer Forum is brought to you by America's Conservation Ag Movement. We appreciate all of their support. If you'd like to learn more about America's Conservation Ag Movement, go to www.agweb.com/ACAM. Bill, Tim, and I were talking before the show, and the roar of this campaign at the House level, the Senate level, the presidential level, the run for the state house and the state senate, the roar is deafening this year in Iowa. What's it like in Idaho?
Well, Idaho is traditionally pretty conservative, but it's surrounded by a couple states to the west that are very, 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 very contrary to that business climate thought.
Yeah, no doubt. Tim, I mean, how are you handling it? You doing okay?
Well, you know, you have to handle it, but my thoughts are that I would love campaign finance reform to the extent that nothing would really happen until after Labor Day for the major. 3 months before the primary, you could only campaign. That only the money raised within the state could be spent on ads, because my TV is constant campaign ads that are mostly negative, built upon half-truths, and it just gets old. And we've got 2 months of it to go yet, and there's no point in it. People just tune it out. And yeah, in reality, if you got the money out, they would be focused on facts rather than innuendo.
Yeah, you know what? If they want to put as much effort into this as they are, let's get more debates, more face-to-face debates. I don't know if you saw the Iowa debate between for the first district house, Tim, or not, but that was fantastic. That was really good.
I did see it, and that's what we need more of. And they both did well, and that's what we need to see, you know.
Yep.
But you can tell that they don't agree. They have different political ideologies, which is, we already know that, but it's nice to see them verbalized.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, Bill, when you're looking at the big race between Trump and Biden, what are they getting right? What are they getting wrong?
Trump's playing a little longer game than most politicians, and a number of us in production ag appreciate that. You know, because in production ag, we have to play a longer game. We can't suffer the vagaries of 1 year and change our whole plans. And so there's an appreciation for this administration, earlier mentioned people within it, who are taking a hard line, on trade and saying it needs to be reciprocal. And that's greatly appreciated by those of us in production ag.
Yeah. Tim, what do you think? Between Trump and Biden, what are they getting right? What are they getting wrong?
Well, what I found interesting today was that Biden started announcing his transition advisory team. And that was, you know, and he's pulling from former Obama administration officials. Mm-hmm. And what the announcements today were, both in immigration and trade, and I think that tells us, if we can look back and we can get a comparison of how the Obama administration ran and who he's bringing back in. What I also found it interesting was that he's catching a lot of flack from it, because not everybody
evidently wants those people back. Trump, with his waiver announcement today, helped himself a lot in Iowa and helped Joni too.
Yeah. Yeah, talking about Senator Joni Ernst. I mean, that's a tight race between Ernst and the Democrat challenger, Greenfield. I don't think there's any question that the delay of the Trump administration has turned it into a campaign issue for Ernst. And hopefully that will be settled and we can move on and get to some of the other issues going forward here. Real quick, Bill, what's the priority on your farm right now?
Well, I see autonomous systems, driverless equipment. I think it'll rival the Industrial Revolution in ag. The horses to steel to autonomous will be something that we can't wait for, or welcome, and will revolutionize our industry. That's a little bit of the vision that I have, and I'm working with an entity to try and get autonomous systems on my farm.
Tim, it sounds like you and Bill might enjoy marinating some ice cubes together.
That would be wonderful, wouldn't it? I actually have a daughter that lives in Meridian, Idaho, so I don't know how far he is from there.
Yeah, but the electronic vehicles and everything is a, one of the things that you're watching is a real challenge to agriculture.
Yeah, I think it's a tremendous challenge. And as we talked in the Farm Journal magazine, September 2020, there's a little article about that is quite depressing, actually, about the future of autonomous and non-autonomous electric vehicles. And General Motors just announced today they took 11% stake in Nikolay, who's going to make electric pickups and fuel cell pickups.
You guys, we could talk for hours. Bill, thank you so much. Appreciate your time.
Yep.
Tim, appreciate you as well. Thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you later. Hey, you got to come back this afternoon. We got Tommy Grisafi on AgriTalk.